My name's Jo, as I was just introduced by James, and I'm from an organisation called eWorks, which we were having a discussion just before most of you came in. It's part of the Australian Flexible Learning Framework. And what we've done is we have put together what we call a learning design tool, which has been specifically designed for people who are wanting to create their own online learning materials. So hopefully you'll find it of some use going through. What we found is that there is a need out there in the marketplace for people to create strong instructional design, and we're hoping that this tool, as it guides people through the process, whether they be novice users or experienced learning designers, will in fact start to create a community of best practice in instructional design. So what we're offering is scaffolded support for users when they're completing online learning design projects. And the underlying reason driving this particular tool is that there was a need out there in the marketplace for teacher support, for RTOs, for people who are really put under time pressures to create online learning design in very, very short time frames. So hopefully it will lead to some quality instructional materials. As I said, the Learning Design Tool is an initiative of the Australian Flexible Learning Framework. The original paper-based version of this online tool was a collaboration between Professor Ron Oliver, who's now at Edith Cowan, and two other people, one person from Kangan Batman TAFE in Melbourne and another lady from West One in also in Perth. What we've got is the paper-based tool. The URLs up there is available online if people wish to go in and download and print out a copy of the paper version. We had a team of developers put together from the paper version, transition this into an online format. Where I came in was about 90% of the way through that online development project. If anybody's worked with online developers before, being handed a project that's 90% complete isn't really the best time to be walking into something. And I've come at it with a completely different set of ideas and a different approach. So I managed to negotiate having this online tool released as a beta version. And what we've done is we have pushed out the beta version to the online community. So for those people who might be skeptics about Web 2 collaboration tools through Facebook, LinkedIn, and a wide variety of other mechanisms, where I put this URL out through those online mechanisms, I've had terrific feedback that's come through from not only every state in Australia, but also from people from the US and also the UK. There is a very similar project to this that's been done by JISC, and we've had some dialogue happening between the two of us. People have been so generous in giving their time, particularly the person from the United States. If I'd gone to him in a consulting capacity, he would have charged me thousands and thousands of dollars to give me the advice that's come back to me via the web absolutely free. So, you know, it's been a fantastic success to this point in time. And we're now have taken all that feedback on board, and we're now looking to appoint a developer so we can now redevelop and go through the process again. What we found in that feedback is usability, accessibility, and design issues that have been highlighted. There needs to be some strengthening of instructional design. And also, at the end of this online tool, we've decided to add in a storyboard component. Interestingly enough, the paper version was written about 18 months to 2 years ago, and in that time frame there's been a complete changing of Web 2 technology, so the paper-based version needs to have those included, and also employability skills, which have become now a requirement in when you're doing instructional design in a web in TAFE and university sectors. Opportunities, as I touched on earlier, are to increase the professional standard of instructional design and increase the ability for those people using it to deliver high quality materials. And hopefully through the framework, we can offer an online collaborative community for online designers, which would be a really nice link and for an online tool to have that collaborative support. What we're going to do now is just take you through a look at what this tool is and talk about some of the feedback that I have received and how it is going to improve in the next round. What I would like is to include a video that demonstrates what the tool actually does, rather than you just going on and clicking the start button and wondering what on earth it is you're going to get at the end of it. The product itself has been built using Adobe Air, and what we found with TAFE New South Wales, apparently, I'm told, has a block on using Adobe Air within TAFE institutes. So that's problem number one for a usability, accessibility issue. I'm leaning towards developing this as a web-based tool. So that, of course, presents its own challenges as well. But I think for everybody to be able to access and use it, a web online tool will be far easier for all concerned. This is what you get. This is just the start process, how you name your project and what you just keeps on clicking. I find it really quite clunky in the startup mode. I think there's a few steps there that could just be gotten rid of quite easily. And then when you actually launch it, this is what you get. Now, if you're like me, when I saw this for the first time, I went, oh my. For instructional designers, the three E's, engage, enthuse and excite, that just kind of like, I sat there and went, oh, right, okay, where do I start? So that page will be very much redefined and redeveloped as we go through. But taking that to one side, when you do start to get into it, one of the bits of feedback that I've had is this continue button down in the corner here. Accessibility people and usability people absolutely detest that and have told me there is no reason to have that when you've got all these things across the top that people can use. So that continue button will disappear. What I would like to see as we go through is at the moment you'll see the triangles up there change to a green tick. When you get into stage four, where there are so many different steps to go through, having all those ticks across the top kind of does your head in a little bit. So I'd prefer to see them that they actually just change colour, so you see blocks of colour as you're going across. Also, to have these fields, the name and the date pre-populating. So for people who want to link to Vetter data, that will automatically start that process. Qualifications. I would like to see the NTIS site linked in here. So for those people who are designing two competencies, trying to remember competency codes is a bit of a nightmare. So rather than trying to remember them yourself, linking to the NTIS site so that it automatically takes you through, if you were doing a certificate four, would quite hopefully just give you a list of the certificate four courses and you could just click on that and this automatically comes up. That, again, is my world. Whether a developer will be able to do that or not, I don't know, but we're about to find out. The industry... also like to see a drop-down menu here that aligns to the ABS industry codes, particularly moving forward when you're wanting to do some statistical analysis, so it's already linked in, so we're not reinventing the wheels as we go along. Job roles, there's been some discussion as to whether job roles should be renamed job skills. So again, it's a personal preference of words. And then what you get at the end of the first section is this, which when you get to the end, you get a whole big printout, so you can print this out and hand that to a developer so they can then start working with you, or they can access your file online and start working with you to develop your materials. Into stage two, again, which is really about thinking about who your audience is. A lot of times when we are designing learning materials, we like to design them the way we've always designed them, that we get into that groove of how we like to work. And one of the most common mistakes is that we forget about who our audience is. So these first couple of stages are really forcing the user to identify and determine who their audience is. AQF level, again, is in this section. I would prefer to take it back to that part in the first section when you're thinking about your qualification, because it is at that point that you really are thinking AQF level at that point in time. Also like to see a link there to the AQF site, so if people want to find out more information, the tool then can take them off on that journey. Age group, I find this really interesting. I have got no idea how they came up with these age categories. Mature at 35 plus. I've always, in academic papers, understood mature to be 25 plus. Somebody told me that it's now dropped to 21, but I have asked that person to find me hard evidence of that, and they haven't been able to. So if anybody has any evidence that it is now 21 plus as mature age, if you could flick me an email, that'd be great. An age group here where it says other, I find that kind of interesting too, because when I first saw other, what constitutes other? Dead? I'm not quite, that intrigues me slightly as well. Anyway, special needs, they're focused on language literacy and numeracy, but as we know, there are lots of other special needs, whether it be computer literacy, whether it be visually impaired, hearing impaired, cognitive disabilities, the list just goes on. And I would like to expand on that list. And also, when we get to stage four, there's a section where you can start to choose your activity types to suit your learning. I'd like to see that linked from this part so that if you have chosen, say, somebody who is hearing impaired, and then in stage four, when you choose the activity type as in, say, a video, it prompts you to say this is, you need to rethink perhaps this strategy of using video. Educational background, this is pretty much standard. Reasons for learning, again, is pretty straightforward. And like you got at the end of the first stage, you get a summary also at the end of the second stage. The third stage, I'm just going to whip through this because I'm conscious that I've got 25 minutes and time is marching on. This, for me, is the icing on the cake. When you go into this stage for the first time, you have got no idea what you're going to get at the end. So again, that underpinning instructional design really needs to shine through if we are using this tool or promoting this tool as a leader in instructional design. So there needs to be some explanatory text up front. What you're doing is you're being asked a series of questions that you tick off on those boxes. And also, you might call me thick, but it took me forever to realise that that blue eye in the circle there relates to the learning design guide tab up the top, I've sort of had this light bulb moment. And this is a bit of a blonde second, I think, and that's my phone. A blonde moment when I had to sort of try and figure out, oh, that's what that means. Oh, excellent. So if you do click on that blue circle there with the eye, it actually takes you to the paper-based guide and gives you an explanation of what that term or what's back, bit more background information. But if we keep clicking through this, you're asked a series of questions, and this is when I was going through it for the first time, I started to get a bit annoyed with it because I'm thinking, oh, why on earth am I sitting here ticking all these boxes for? So in the end, I got a bit impatient and I just ticked anything, which is so not the right thing to do, because at the end, depending on the responses you've given, it tells you whether your learners are task-directed, task-guided, or task-autonomous. So that then determines your learning design strategy based on which number you come out more heavily weighted towards. At this point, I think this needs to go a bit deeper. It needs to, I would like to see the headings, the three headings across the top there, clickable so that you can get some more information on what does task-directed, task-guided and task-autonomous actually mean. And then to take it a little bit deeper again and have examples of the types of activities that you should use for those different users, and then just to really give somebody a migraine, give examples at a certificate 1, 2, 3, 4 and right through so people can get a feel for the type of activities that they should be putting in. Stage 4 is an interesting one because the person who developed it came at the fourth stage from a project management perspective. The people who wrote the paper-based learning design guide came at it from an instructional designer's perspective. So there has been some crossover in this fourth stage. Define project scope and define object size. I personally think that they should be at the front, because if you're going to start thinking about your audience and thinking about the learning design that you're going to do, my logic tells me that you would actually be defining the project scope up front, not in stage 4. So if anybody has any strong thoughts about that, you can let me know. You'll notice the little round circles turned into a blue square, which is the eye corresponds with the templates and guides. So you can click on that, on the templates and guides up the top there, and you've got a paper-based version of this particular section. One thing from an instructional design point of view that I detest are these drop-down boxes. Quite often they're very easy to miss if you are not concentrating or you don't understand that there are drop-down boxes. I think that needs to be reworked. And also if with the budget, you should be able to, most people will have a budget of some sort in Excel or some other program, so to be able to import that into the project at that point in time. And there's an example of the project planner template. Identify resources. Apparently that's just my gobbledygook there going through. Identify resources should have been identify existing resources, so to force people about what may already be available and out there. So rather than reinvent the wheel, think about what's out there. The framework has the Learning Object Repository Network, where there are 1,500 learning objects sitting. Ideal place to have a link back to that site. Determine assessment. Again, would like to see a link there to Vet Assess, which has a whole bank of ready online assessments. So again, for teachers, why bother reworking assessments when they've got thousands of them already online. So again, don't reinvent the wheel. This whole purpose of this online tool is to try and give people as much information to make things as easy for them as possible. Define learning sequence. Again, we've got the waterfall boxes happening. And we'll just quickly go through the last couple. Ask you to think about identifying design features, mapping the flow, and here we come to the choose activity tools, which I referred to earlier. So it'd be really neat if you were going to, choose Flickr, SlideShare, for example, and you were working with visually impaired people, a prompt coming up just to say, hey, back in stage one, you said this was your learner group. And also, when you think about it, people aren't going to sit down and do this from start to finish in one sitting. It's the sort of thing that you can opt in and out of and come back to, or it might be somebody on the team might determine who the learners are in stages one and two and then get somebody else to actually go through and do stages three and maybe somebody else do stage four. So an assumption you can't make that it's going to be the same person doing this from start to finish. Also be nice to have Flickr. I know what Flickr is, but does some other people who might be in remote parts of the country, do they know what Flickr is? So again, having a link to the website to direct people there. And again, when you come to identify the media and you are clicking up with photographs, illustrations and video and putting that in, I would like to see that pre-populate from the previous screen directly to there. And then we talk about verifying design. As I mentioned, if you've got a team of people working on this one project, you can add in a comment and store it for people to go to and have a look at. So at the end of all of that, this is what you get, a nice printout, which you can, as I said, either print out hard copy and take it along to your multimedia team or your online developer and say, here it is, or you can send them the file name and they can go back online and work through it in an online format. So that's about it from me. I know I've zoomed through that, but if anybody has any questions that they might like to ask, feel free. No questions.
So it strikes me, Joe, it does two things. It's a tool for drawing together resources that already exist in the learning resource repository.
Yep.
And it's also a tool for creating from scratch.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And I guess that's where the whole background of this originated, was because you've got trainers and RTOs where clients are coming to them saying, oh, we need to start delivering a Cert 4 in, say, training and assessment help. Hopefully, having something like this, people will be able to pull it together really quickly with prompts along the way and have a quality output at the end rather than just relying on memory or other people they know to get information from them. And then it's online as well, and it's stored there. So for people who are teaching to competency-based materials, when you go through course reaccreditation, rather than having to start from scratch again with all those pieces of paper, if you've got it online, hopefully it might make life a bit easier if you go through the reaccreditation process and you need
to. It could be also used as almost a register of some sort.
Yes.
Because it'll, as you say, it produces that document at the end that captures everything about the content strategies, the, and so on. basis that you're going to be using for the whole thing. So, yeah.
Thank you. And in Melbourne, Swinburne University do, I forget the name of the course, it's something to do with training an instructional design component of a teaching qualification. And once we've made our few amendments to this, they will start using it as a teaching tool within that university. So there's a broad application, and the exciting part for me now, the challenging part for me now, is to try and unpick what exists and tweak it and refine it and then release it back out to the market as the final product. Hopefully by, the developers are telling me sort of March. Yeah, the developers are telling me March, but if you've ever worked with developers, apologies if there are any developers here, I would anticipate probably June, realistically. And if it's earlier than that, then that's a bonus.
So is there really much difference the print-based and the version you're creating there?
Yes, yeah. In the print-based version, there's a whole section on storyboarding that hasn't transitioned into this online product.
And you're not going to bring that up?
We will, yeah. So there'll be a storyboarding component, and I guess that's more for the novice or the user who is just themselves doing everything. So to think about the storyboarding aspect. Yeah, and that's challenging in itself because everybody storyboards differently as well. Yeah, there was a question from this.
Just a quick question. Yep. I thought separating out your type from learners was probably sometimes not always the case because often you have mixed classes.
Yes.
And so I just thought that maybe an option for mixed ages, mixed abilities, mixed.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, and but you can click on that on the screen. You can actually select more than one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, okay. Thank you.
So conscious